What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to the Gravity Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Chris. Thank you for choosing to tune in today. Hey, folks, there's a lot of ways you could be spending your time, and you are choosing to tune in here. We're hoping, Jamie and I are hoping that it's helpful. We're hoping that we are bringing on guests that are helping you, primarily the first responder community, all those folks in police, fire, EMS, corrections, dispatch, military, and veterans. Life is tough, and there's a lot of noise and chaos that's going to pull you around and that may even stir up your minds and your hearts. And we want to bring on guests and give you tools that are going to help you stay grounded, that are going to help you wade through the noise and chaos and really identify your foundations in life. Today's guest is a first for us, recognizing the impact that this job has on our dispatching community as well. Deborah Green is going to be on the podcast today. Over 30 years of first responder service between being in the California National Guard and being a police dispatcher. I'm excited for you to hear the insights that she has from a career in dispatching. Folks, Jamie and I, have continued to spotlight primarily one organization, Service Peace Warriors. If you haven't checked it out, they're doing great things, providing service animals to both military veterans and first responders. Check them out. However, we also want to continue to bring other resources to you. And if you're watching on YouTube, you see that I have a snazzy new hat. And this hat is a hat for the recovery center known as Deer Hollow in Draper, Utah. This is where I went this summer when I was struggling with PTSD. And I had a really positive experience there. I also wanted to punch people in the face sometimes, but that was more of a PTSD reaction than what people were actually doing. So it's one place as well as others. If you look back at previous podcasts, you see I like to wear a Warriors hat as well. Warriors Heart hat. I said that wrong. Warriors Heart hat as well. And just another great organization that's providing inpatient treatment to first responders and military folks that are struggling with PTSD. So check these out. They'll be down in the show notes, folks, for all three of those organizations that I mentioned today: Service Peace Warriors, Deer Hollow, and Warriors Heart. With that, folks, let's get into this interview with Deborah Green. Deborah Green, welcome to the Gravity Podcast.
Hello.
Hey, you have been a very patient woman. Obviously, that's one of your virtues. You had reached out and you and I emailed back and forth, I want to say like March timeframe, maybe April, I don't know. And we were putting something in place. We had scheduled a recording. And then if listeners listen back on episode 94, they'll hear that this summer was kind of rough for me. So I had to cancel the interview last minute, and you've just been patient. And then I circled back and said, hey, I need you on the show. And you were kind enough to come. So thank you for your patience.
Oh, not a worry. This is worth it.
Hey, you've been on a number of podcasts already. So there's some people that maybe know your story, Deborah, as a dispatcher. But if you don't mind, just introduce yourself to the listeners that don't already know you.
Okay. Well, I'm Deborah Green. I'm a retired public safety dispatcher. I've have over 30 years law enforcement experience, 28 years as a dispatcher. Started my career as a military police, and kind of overlapped with my first dispatching job with Sacramento Police Department, and then was hired with El Dorado County, and that's where I ended my career in 2021. And had a critical incident in 2019, which kind of pretty much straw that broke the camel's back in my career.
Yeah. How many years, I think you said it, but how many years total there in 2021?
So in 2021, I had 28 years as a dispatcher with 30 in law enforcement.
Wow. Thank you for serving for so long. That's not easy.
No, not easy.
And there's
not easy at all.
There's something you said there, the straw that broke the camel's back. And I think that's what I've heard from so many first responders across the different disciplines, from police to fire, EMS, dispatch, corrections, military, is there's this accumulation of trauma, this accumulation of events, and eventually it just gets too heavy. And If we were totally 100% okay at the beginning of our career with that same event, maybe you would have been fine. Maybe not. But with the addition of all the stuff that you saw over 30 years, or I guess 28 at the time, it was just too heavy.
Well, even with being military police, I was down at the LA riots. So that was a huge, and was shot at while I was down there. So that was probably the beginning of all of my trauma, you know. But when you're a dispatcher, it's not like the guys on patrol that deal with one call. And if they have a critical incident, they don't have to deal with another call for a while. Dispatchers were, you know, we may deal with one, two, sometimes even three, depending on the agency, per night, yeah. You know? And so that just kind of builds up after years and years.
Oh, completely. Hey, maybe we can rewind back to that military time. Were you in the National Guard? Is that what I understand?
Yeah, California National Guard.
Okay, and you got called out for the LA riots. I mean, anyone that's my generation knows, maybe folks that are in their 20s, just hearing that alone may not grab their attention. But we're talking Rodney King and the riots that mm-hmm. happened after those officers beat him up. What happened? What was it like being boots on the ground there?
Oh, my gosh. It's so much different, you know, when you're going into training in the military, you're trained to have that enemy that is not your countryman.
Yeah.
So when you're going into an area with civil unrest, these are your people, you know, and so you're going in and trying to calm people down, and being shot at by your own people is just... I don't know. I think that was a big trauma for me, to be honest. It's like, why are you shooting at us? We're just coming down here to keep the peace. And you know, I honestly had no, I was kind of neutral in the whole thing, you know, because I was watching from Northern California. I wasn't even in Southern California when this was happening. So I had no stake in the game other than, you know, let's get everybody into their corners and kind of calm things down.
Yeah, we want to preserve life, right? We don't want more people getting hurt, and justice needs to run the justice course, but we want people to be safe. And if I remember correctly, I mean, I was young at the time, but I remember watching it on television, and I mean, just insanity in reference to people looting and rioting and victimizing more and more people.
It was an odd scene. We went into Long Beach first. And so this tells you how far reaching it was. It went from, you know, LA into Long Beach, kind of one big city down there, even though there's multiple. But there was one working fire on every block in Long Beach when we went in.
Oh, wow.
Which was, you know, and you're seeing people like going into grocery stores and other stores getting supplies. You know, not even, yeah, so that places were boarded up and letting people in one by one just to get, you know, regular groceries for them to live. People are barricaded into their houses because of all these other people that are out looting and causing problems. You know, it was a real scary, scary time. And then after Long Beach, we went into downtown LA, and our company was the security for Parker Center, which at the time was the headquarters for LAPD. So that tells you something when LAPD needs armed security.
Oh, totally. But
it was a crazy deal, you know, and some of our guys were escorting the fire trucks to their calls, because people were shooting at the fire trucks and the ambulances as they were going to calls. So yeah, it was really scary down there.
Wow. You said that this was the beginning of your trauma. I mean, totally, right? I mean, like, getting shot at is by anybody, whether you're deployed overseas or whether you're here in the United States, that is going to be traumatic. And you also touched on the fact that this was your own people. I mean, this is our American citizens that are shooting at you. Was that I mean, I don't know. Was that like a weight that you cognitively thought about at the time? Like, oh my gosh. Or was it something that kind of stayed in your blinders and you were just in survival mode?
I was just in survival mode down there. It was crazy. Yeah. It really was. I mean, you're just kind of like, I don't remember much, you know, just kind of little flashes here and there. And that was just because when we went in, we were so hyper-focused on everything and keeping ourselves safe as we're driving through.
Oh, completely. So you serve in the Guard, you eventually demobilize, you're not deployed to LA anymore. And is that when you begin your dispatching career?
Well, actually, I began my dispatching career before LA.
Oh, before you deployed. Okay.
So that was the overlap. So I deployed while I was still at the Academy for Sacramento Police Dispatch.
Okay. So then you came back and you had to finish the Academy. So they pulled you out of the Academy. Oh, did you have to start back at day one, I assume, or did they?
No, they gave me a kind of like a week refresher of everything. Okay. And then I graduated, quote unquote, graduated with everybody, but I was still doing my own thing with the Academy.
Okay. All right.
If that makes any sense. It was.
And how big of a dispatch center did they have at Sacramento?
Sacramento had, at the time, you would have 10 to 16 call takers, four radio dispatchers, a radio supervisor, and then they also had a fire site. So they had two to three fire dispatchers, so that in the one center.
Wow, that's a lot. A lot of call takers. Wow. Did your dispatchers have to do any call taking with that many call takers?
No. If you were on radio, you did radio. You didn't do any phones at all. Just because the way the radio traffic was, you know, some agencies, it's so big, that's what you have to do.
Yeah. Stay focused.
Sacramento Sheriff's Office is the same way.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't tell you this in our, you know, pre-interview emails, but so I was a dispatcher in the Air Force. So you and I kind of did this opposite. You did some law enforcement things in the military and you were a dispatcher. I was a dispatcher in the Air Force and then did the law enforcement route. The way they did it in the Air Force is you'd have a desk sergeant and the desk sergeant was your dispatcher, your 911 operator, kind of the second in charge, not really the second in charge in that, you know, there was a flight sergeant, sometimes an assistant flight sergeant, but you were the one telling people where to go. There wasn't zones. So you're dispatching the units until the flight sergeant says something different. But an entire year in Korea of being a desk sergeant equated to probably about 5 minutes of your time at Sacramento. I'm not joking because
I can believe it.
It was the Air Force. So Friday nights got a little hairy with people drinking too much alcohol at the NCO club. But short of that, or a in-flight emergency with an F-16 or something like that, short of that, it was a pretty peaceful year being an Air Force dispatcher. So how long were you at Sacramento before you moved on to your next
agency? I was there for 11 months and got released on probation just because I wasn't fast enough for that department.
Yeah.
But they gave me excellent recommendations for a smaller department.
Yes.
And that's when I went to El Dorado, much smaller.
I love it.
So when I started there would be five people on shift, four people or three working radios, one working fire, and then a call taker.
Yeah.
But everybody did double duty there.
Yeah, and that's the way I see it at my hometown right now is the agency I just retired from is they do double duties. They may have a call taker, but everyone's answering the phones when they can.
Yeah.
How was that hard? So I've seen that with a number of my friends that they tried to start at a larger police agency that just has an extremely high ops tempo. It is call to call to call. And they struggled with the volume, but then they went on to a smaller agencies and they are just superstars. They're just knocking it out of the park. The tempo is better for their personality. However, as human beings, this can almost be another trauma in that we have this narrative going through our minds of, I didn't make it. Was that a struggle for you or did they transition you well?
At the beginning, it was a struggle because I had 6 months in between where I was released and when I started another part-time job as I was still looking for another dispatching job. It was hard. It you know, I mean, when you're fired from any job, it's like, oh my God, I'm a failure. But you kind of go, wait, no, I had this great foundation that they gave me, which was an academy, and then, you know, throwing me to the wolves of the Sacramento general public.
Right.
And just, you know, I mean, it's like, okay, there you go. I had a great foundation. And that kind of gave me a little more confidence. And then when I went in, when I went to El Dorado, I was clear within 6 months.
Okay.
Which usually it takes a year to a year and a half there.
Yeah.
Because of the way they have things structured. So I was the fastest person to clear.
Yeah.
So, you know, that gave you, you know, that gives you even more confidence. It's like, okay, I can do this.
I learned how to drink through a fire hose. Now, now drinking through a garden hose, I can do this all day long like a champ, even when it's on full pressure. Thanks for having the transparency to share that part of it. You could easily construct your story and it not even be untruthful, but sometimes it's easier for us to guard with some of those parts of our story because those, they do have this kind of this vulnerable piece to them. And I know from my own friends that they've walked that path, that they got released from an agency. And now I had one of my friends, he was struggling for, I think about a year, like what was wrong with me? And I loved it because eventually he tested with another agency that just has a different ops tempo. And he has done amazing there. And I just love seeing him be successful because we need great police officers, dispatchers, corrections officers,
firefighters.
We need great folks in these disciplines, but our personalities are different. It's not right or wrong. You put that high ops tempo person in a Mayberry and they're going to piss everyone off by writing tickets to everyone. It's like, whoa, take a breath and slow down. You're in a small town now. We don't hammer our citizens here. We can get an awful lot done with verbal warnings and our presence.
Oh, yeah.
So tell me about showing up at El Dorado, right?
El Dorado.
Dorado. I knew I was going to miss
it. Oh, my gosh. You guys, Midwest cracks me up.
So El Dorado, tell me about your experience there.
It was really good. I really liked the job. When I started there, we did Sheriff's Department, Placerville Police Department, and County Fire.
Okay.
So we were combined, and we weren't with an agency. We were with the county. We were our own department in the county.
Yeah.
Then as we go along, as we're going along, we lost fire to Cal Fire. So they did their own dispatch. And then we were down to Sheriff's Department in Placerville. And then in 2000, Placerville left and had their own. So we were just us, two radios and call takers. But we also, after hours, did Department of Transportation and Animal Control. And we were the Forest Service dispatchers after hours.
Okay.
For U.S. Forest Service. So, you know, we had a lot of different things going on because we were a rural county.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun.
What's the relationship like? So I've seen really great relationships between dispatch centers and their officers. I don't know from a fire perspective, obviously, because I'm just not a firefighter. I've also seen it to where we get pissy with each other. You know, we have that voice inflection like dispatch. It's like, hello, I have a call in my ear of someone on 911 and I'm trying to do both, but it's kind of hard. What was it like at El Dorado. I don't want to mess this up twice. El Dorado. No. What was it like at El Dorado?
It was good. When I first started, though, it was kind of an us versus them.
Yeah.
Just because we were our own department and it was, you know, but as time went on, I kind of tried to, helped change that because these are the guys that we're sending to the calls, you know, and we have to work with them on the radio. So why not get to know them as people?
Yes.
You know, this guy that's pissing you off over here, that's doing the 15 traffic stops the first hour that he's out from briefing. Hey, why don't you talk to him and see why he's doing that? Maybe, you know, ask him to do things a little differently so that, you know, you're not getting so mad because of that.
Yeah.
You know? And so we, and also helped our last year that I was there, we got a new building. So we were in the actual building for the department before. We were in a separate building from the main sheriff's office. So that made it a little more difficult. But this time, you know, we were upstairs and everybody would come up and sit and say hi. And it was a lot easier.
Deborah, what you just said is a very simple complex, a very simple concept, but it's hard for us to do sometimes. Let's just build relationships with each other, yeah. Right? It gets get to know each other. Mm-hmm. When it's just that jerk on the other side of the radio or that effing dispatcher or whatever else, then we can get into that us and them. But when we recognize, hey, this other human being has an important role to play in this, the whole community safety thing we're doing, and you get mm-hmm. to know each other, compassion comes to the table and empathy comes to the table. And like you just said, maybe that conversation of, wow, you really get after it right at the beginning of shift. Why do you enjoy doing it then? And just starting a conversation, and then somewhere in there, you may get to a better spot where we figure out how to work better together.
Oh, definitely. And then when you get to know them, it makes that relationship on the radio during shift a lot easier, you know, and you can kind of work with their personalities and kind of anticipate what their needs are before they ask for it.
Oh, those are always the best dispatchers. From a police perspective, the best dispatchers are the ones that I just get dispatched to a call, and before I have a chance, they've already run the names of the involved parties, and they're shooting that out to me, and I'm like, holy smokes.
Now, see, our department, we couldn't do that. We had to be requested. Yeah. There's California has full access and less than full access.
Okay.
And so we were less than full access, so we had to be requested to do that.
Okay.
So that's fine. You know, you're going to anticipate that they're going to do that, but asking certain questions of the call, you know, the callers.
Yes.
Because you know what they're going to need, you know, down the road.
With the details of the dispatch that you're sending them to. Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. And again, the great dispatchers, I always heard asking those kind of calls. And then again, I like what you said though, because I don't want to come across as an us and them, me saying the great dispatchers, now alluding to the not great ones. The bad ones. They go to the land of bad dispatchers.
The only crusty. I became one of them at one time.
I think we all became one of them. Whether it was the old crusty cop that's just a jerk on the radio to no matter who it is, or the crusty dispatcher that, you know, likes to get a jab in there with a voice inflection here and there.
Oh, but. Yeah. I did it every once in a while. You know, the deputy that saying, hey, dispatch, do you have my returns yet? And I kind of went over the radio and said, yeah, after the 10 others that I have to give back, I will get to yours right away.
My call sign recently here was King 12 dispatch, run 10 names, please. It's like 10 names. Is there a way we can do that on our mobile data, our in-car computers or not?
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Sometimes we couldn't because we literally were geographically separated from our car. But most of the time, if we had multiple officers on scene, my thought was, hey, let's have a couple of us do scene security. And then a couple of us go run this in our cars because it's just going to save everybody. I mean, I live in a 2-county. I'm trying how many cities are on our dispatch center. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Wow.
9, 10, maybe 9. So 9 cities, that's including counties. Cities are counties. Not to mention the various fire departments that are all in that mix.
Oh my gosh.
And they're all on one dispatch center. And I think there's usually one fire dispatcher and one for our city. And then there's 2 more police dispatchers for a collection of the other cities. And then we have a data channel where you run all your names. But again, running 10 names, oh my gosh. I always sit there. I couldn't run 10 names. You want me to run? I'm going to have to get out a piece of paper and write all this down. I don't even know how
And then as dispatchers, we have to put those in the calls too.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
So by the time you go look at your call, it's, you know, pages and pages. Pages long just from returns.
Yeah. And I get it. I get why we get pissy with each other. I get why officers get short with dispatchers and vice versa. Here's the deal. This gets back to PTSD. This gets back to the stress of the job. Yeah. When our stress is amped up, whether it be because of just the day and whatever's going on, or whether it be a specific call, we're going to have less to give. We're going to, our prefrontal cortex, that great brain that helps us make good decisions, is not fully online. And we're going to make comments and we're going to be short, just like I am with my wife or my kids. And I'm like, man, why was I like that with her? And then I think, I had a rough day at work this week. And
and
I'm now being short with my family over silly things. Mm-hmm. Did that play out for you at all in the outside of work?
Oh, gosh, yeah. My husband had a thing that he used to call poke the tiger. And he could tell when I was just getting frustrated with work and stuff was happening. And so he'd come in and I don't know if it was purposely start fights.
In your mind, it was.
I think it was. But what he was trying to do was make me, get all that emotion out.
Oh, I gotcha.
And just get that exploding and I'd be great for about 6 months.
That's
so. Yeah, it was my husband. He's wonderful. I love him.
I was going to say that's pretty emotionally aware for him to be able to see that in you and to be able to link it back to, hey, she just needs to have an outlet and I'm going to help her do that now by pissing her off. Yeah.
And when you've got all these years in and you've got all this stress, you tend to isolate yourself and not go out and do anything. And so he was there to get me out of the house and go do things. And, we got a motorcycle so that we could go out and travel, which was great. And, he forced me to take my vacations, which was good.
Yes.
And not just vacations where I would stay home and clean the house for a week because that was the only time that I could but getting me out. So, we did a lot of traveling on the motorcycle, which was fun.
Yeah. My wife and I, we like to say that the most magical place on the earth is Cannon Beach, Oregon. And we love going there. In fact, we were just there this weekend. We just got back yesterday. And so we go there as often as we can. But I usually talk about that and to say, what is your Cannon Beach, Oregon? It may be a motorcycle, the back of a motorcycle in the open highway, right?
Oh, yeah.
Whatever it is, people have to have some kind of escape, some kind of thing that they look forward to and destination or activity that's going to help them exhale from all of the garbage we take in.
We used to go to my in-laws up in Trinity County, California, and there was no phones, no internet. They had electricity and running water, so that was good. But no phones and no internet, and it was great. You just go up there, and you're just so disconnected, and you're in the middle of the national forest, and go sit out on the porch and drink your coffee in the mornings and have your cocktails on the porch in the evening, watching the deer on the front lawn, and it was fabulous.
That sounds awesome. I think I want to sell my house and go to a place just like that.
My escape for quite a few years. Hmm.
Hey, I want to get to 2019 here in a second, but first I wanted to ask, what was some of the buildup before 2019? I know for me, there's a certain type of call. It's usually some kind of child abuse or a death scene. Those are the ones that kind of got me. It may be different for dispatchers just because of the role you guys play. What were the things that kind of impacted you most on the job?
Answering the call and somebody actively being stabbed.
Oh, wow.
Answering the phone call from the hospital telling me that the 4-year-old in that crash had died.
Yeah.
Listening to the moms crying because they've come home and found their child has killed themselves or has died.
Yeah.
It's so many different things, a lot of shootings. And it just kind of builds and builds and builds. But also back in 2015, I had open heart surgery. So I had a major trauma to my body.
Yes.
At that time, and developed what's called post-perfusion syndrome, which is from going on to the bypass machines for the surgery. and you develop brain bleeds and a lot of mental health issues,
yeah.
that what it does is it just, it was like 10 times it kind of built up. So about 6 months after the surgery, all my anxiety, all my depression, everything just kind of exploded.
Okay.
And so I had gone back to work after that. So I'm dealing with the stresses from work and then all of this mental health stuff and physical trauma. So I had a dear friend and a fabulous supervisor do an intervention with me at that time and got me into therapy, which was great.
I like it.
And I had a weekly group that I was going to, and, you know, I was on the road to healing. And then in early of 2019, they stopped the support group. So I had to go to every 6 weeks going and seeing my therapist, but I was going to see the therapist. So yeah, you know, you just have all of this built up. And so I'm kind of dealing with all of that along with the job stress. So
completely. And that's the reality for all of us, right? Is we're complex human beings. It's not simple, just job, just home.
Right.
Just physical ailments. We're complex human beings. And so there's a lot of things that are coming into play and that play off of each other that impact us differently.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I like folks to hear and understand is whether you're a dispatcher, a firefighter, a police officer, if something bothers you and you're looking at your partners to your right and to your left and it's not bothering them, that's normal. Or maybe it is bothering them and they're just not telling you. Either way, it's normal for something to impact you and bother you. And maybe for it doesn't bother me this time. And next time it's going to be vice versa. Mm-hmm. Because I think that's part of what has kept me quiet at times is I don't want to look weak. Why is this bothering me? This isn't a big deal. This shouldn't be bothering me. I've seen worse than this. Well, maybe I have, but it is bothering me and that's okay. So,
yeah.
So it's compounding. Oh, actually, before we get into that, it sounded like you really enjoyed group. That group was,
it was wonderful.
What was powerful about group versus a one-on-one therapy session?
Seeing that there were other people it was just a random group of people. So it wasn't anybody in law enforcement or anything. I was the only person in law enforcement there, but seeing other people that were experiencing what I was experiencing.
Yeah.
You know, depression, anxiety, you know, having the same kind of troubles I did. And I developed a few friendships out of there, you know, but it's just knowing that there's other people really helped.
Yes.
Rather than that one-on-one, you don't know who else is, you know, and that's one thing why I like talking about it, because it's, you know, I want people to know you're not alone.
Yes. And that's the struggle. That's the dark. That's the darkness is I'm mm-hmm. alone. I'm broken. Yes. There's something wrong with me. No, there's not something wrong with you. This is a normal human response to the not normal stuff that we hear and see as first responders. And you're going to be okay. I want you to hear that you're going to be okay. And there's a lot of great therapies and folks out there that can help you. I like what you said there though, the power in group, hearing that you're not alone in this. I agree with you. I didn't think I was going to like group therapy. I'd never tried group therapy until this summer when I went to an inpatient facility. Yeah. And now I'm in group sessions and the power of the work that we did in group was nothing short of remarkable.
Well, and also helping out the other person too, saying, okay, I went and dealt, you know, I was in that same situation and this is what the tools I used to help myself, you know, so you're also helping at the same time.
Yeah. Which is what we all want to do. That's why we're in these professions. Yes. Is because we're helpers, right?
Exactly.
So that's 2015, 2016 timeframe.
Yeah, that's when I had the surgery and went into therapy, which, you know, it's pretty good. I took a lot of classes too. Depression. I have Kaiser Permanente. I don't know if you're familiar with them. It's a HMO here in California and Washington, Oregon. And so they have a lot of classes that they offer. So I took depression classes, anxiety classes, how to deal with stress at work, trauma classes. I mean, I'm still take classes whenever I can. Luckily, they're online now, so that makes it even better. And, you know, it just to learn those tools and how to help yourself using those tools.
And Deborah, what you just said there was powerful, because here's the thing. We can have well-intentioned, good-hearted supervisors. We could have the best organization in the world. But at the end of the day, you got to do the work.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
There is no magic pill. There is no magic fairy wand to help us get better. Mm-hmm. It's just like if I jack up my knee, the physical therapist cannot heal my knee. He or she can walk me through it. They can give me the exercises. They can push me, but I have to do the work. And I love the fact that you are being so proactive with taking classes and learning more about the brain and what's going on in your body.
It also helped with the job. I was able to, you know, you get those people that call that maybe they're not suicidal, but they're having issues, and being able to talk that person out of a panic attack.
Yes.
Using your own tools, because you use them to calm yourself out of a panic attack.
Yes.
So, you know, it translated to the job too, which was good.
Yeah, completely. I love it. So let's move forward. 2019, there was a big call.
Big call.
Can you share us? I know this is a tough one, but can you share it with us?
Yeah, we just celebrated the 4-year anniversary too. So so in October 23rd, well, the night of 22nd, morning of the 23rd, we had a call that I dispatched. It was a suspicious subject in a marijuana grow. And here in California, we can have up to so many plants per person in the backyard and whatnot. So what we thought, it was like kind of a routine call, but not really, you know, you're kind of more on alert in those kind of calls. But it was a 2-unit call, and I sent my 2 units, but then I had a feeling, and I sent a 3rd unit. And as I sent the 3rd unit silently, my sergeant had called up asking for a 3rd unit. So, you know, I told him we had that, and he went also started out that direction just because it was, you know, rural county. It was way out. So we just want to make sure we had enough backup going. And then I went off to a break. And so I'm out doing my break, and during breaks, I would walk and listen to podcasts and whatever. And so I'm coming back up, and I get a text message that we need you here now. And I'm like, okay. So I'm running down the hallway, go inside, and there had already been the first announcement of shots fired. So I, you know, sat down and, you know, listened for a couple seconds, and then took my calls back over, because I was working the radio that night. And, had a couple more transmissions where you could hear the shots being fired in the background. And we lost communication with one of our deputies. And come to find out, he had been shot and killed out there in the field. And so I still had a job to do. I didn't realize he was deceased right away. So you kind of, you're still trying to keep everybody safe and get as much, you know, backup and all of that. When you have a call like this, you kind of get the, you know, I asked everybody, get me the world, send the world. I need everybody. So, you know, Highway Patrol, Placerville Police Department, all the deputies in the county, we were pulling from Tahoe. We were pulling, from Amador County, which was south of us, Sacramento County. So, you know, we were getting a lot of people out there. We had air support coming in. Plus, you know, we're calling everybody out, you know, SWAT team, detectives, everybody's coming out. And I just, you know, for for about an hour. I've got SWAT going and all of that. And then we get a phone call from the hospital. Our deputy was, they were able to extract him and get him to the hospital. So I put that, you know, you put that out of your mind. He's going to the hospital. He'll be fine. We get a call that told us he was deceased. And the reason they told us that that way was because somebody at the hospital had posted on Facebook that they saw that a deputy had been killed. And they didn't want us in dispatch, because we're monitoring everything as we're, you know, going through the call.
Yeah.
And they didn't want us finding out on Facebook.
Yeah.
So they called us, and, you know, that's when we have admin call out. And we're, our sheriff at the time was on a camping trip somewhere, and we had to go send Forest Service out to go get him. And yeah, it was just, it was quite the evening. So I stayed on the radio and worked that and tried to keep everybody on focus on task until the second suspect was caught. And then at that time, my relief was standing behind me, and I said, okay, it's all yours. So, yeah. And then walked out of the room, walked down to the stairwell, and cried for 20 minutes.
Yeah. What was your deputy's name?
Brian Ishmael. Hmm. And we just, I don't know, celebrated. We just observed his fourth anniversary of that. And then his father just posted, which kind of sent me in a lot of melancholy yesterday. He had been sworn in 2015, and I totally forgot. And yesterday, so it was 8 years that he would have been working there.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry for your loss.
It's difficult, but you know, we remember, and we remember fondly, and just gotta keep moving forward.
Yeah. And we do continue to move forward. And I mean, it sounds like you stayed on the job for another couple of years.
What? Well, sort of. Not really. You know, right after 2019, we had COVID.
Oh, good point.
And so we were in COVID lockdown. So yeah, take people that are affected, have PTSD now from this trauma, and put them in seclusion on purpose.
Yeah.
So you're not, and we were still trying to figure out at the beginning, how am I going to go see my therapist? How are we going to do all these things?
Yeah.
And everybody's scrambling to figure out how we're going to get our mental health worked on. So luckily, you know, telehealth kicked in on full speed at that time. So we were able to get telehealth after that, which was good. So I just sit in my office and do my therapy now, which is great.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're self-secluded and in your own brain. And so I started having anger issues and things like that. And a supervisor that was not so supportive and harassment at times went the disciplinary route. So you're taking somebody with PTSD that needs support, that doesn't know what the hell's going on. And then you start disciplining them with, you know, performance improvement and blah, blah, blah. And it just kind of started spiraling. I had another supervisor that was actually going to school to be a therapist. And she said, no, we need to do something different. And so that's when they put me on work, you know, got me to the workman's comp. Yeah. So I was signed off of work a year later, in October of 2020. And then was on workman's comp. And then finally, when they put me in as permanently disabled, is when I retired.
Yeah. What were some of those symptoms that were coming up? I mean, you've kind of briefly touched on, but yeah, what did that look like, whether it be at work or at home?
I mean, just, you don't expect things. So like, a location would pop up and it would just, I would cry.
Yes.
You know, you'd see, we had a couple calls at that same location afterwards. And I'd see it pop up, and you're on that ultra high, super focused and you become, you know, and coming down from that, it's a lot of anxiety. And then you go into that depression and grief. And so you got grief going on, you've got anger issues going on, you're crying at everything, you know, and it was ugly. It was really ugly. I'm sorry to say.
Well, it was ugly. And you know, I obviously don't want to put words in your mouth, so I'm going to speak from my experience. It is agonizing. These body sensations that you're reliving. I didn't realize that that's a flashback. I've had therapists ask me, do you have flashbacks? I'm like, no, I don't have flashbacks. I never have a delusion that I'm not here. And finally, I had a therapist who unpacked that a little bit with me. And she had me describe the body sensations that I'm having when I get triggered by some of these memories. And she goes, Chris, that's a flashback. So I'm not a mental health professional. So all of you listening, I'm not diagnosing you. I'm merely telling you what my people with letters after their name have told me. That's a flashback. When your body goes back into that stress response over a smell, over an address, over a sound, over whatever.
Yes.
That's you having a flashback, and it sucks.
And it's awful.
And then you have the consequence, at least this is what I thought I just heard you say, Deborah. It's not just in that moment. Now you have this almost this cycle that happens maybe hours, days after that event, where you're having to try to get back on your feet and just try to feel normal or some version of normal.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's very hard to do.
Yeah. At what point did you realize in that, because I mean, you'd already been in therapy. It sounds like you were trying to connect with the telehealth. At what point did you realize this is bigger than it was back in 2015?
I really didn't realize it. I needed to have that person tell me, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, well, I know something's wrong with me and I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. I'm calling my therapist and I'm making appointments and all of this. And no, there's something more. You've got to concentrate on this and get more intensive help.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And here's the deal. Something is wrong with us if we have post-traumatic stress, whether it's diagnosable as a disorder or not, doesn't really matter. There's something wrong with us. We have an injury, right? Just like if I broke my leg and I have a bone sticking out of it, there's something wrong with me. Now, I don't think we usually think of it as there's something wrong with you, air quotes intended for all of the YouTube watchers. But you have an injury. Something's not working right. And there's so much brain science out there in reference to how literally our brain, the structures of our brain changes due to these post-traumatic stress disorder injuries. That you have an injury and you're going to need to do some serious stuff to heal up. Yes. What did that healing process look like for you?
Oh my, it's been a long road. The workman's comp psychiatrist started me on CBT. Sorry, cognitive behavioral therapy. And for me, it wasn't working. You know, I'm talking to this person and, you know, we're on telehealth because I can't be in their office. So it's just, you know, I'm too much in my own head and I'm not getting where I need to be. Our peer support at the department got me a scholarship to go to a trauma retreat. And so that December 2020, I went to a trauma retreat which also included horse therapy.
Oh, yes.
Which was fabulous. Yes. But I was also introduced to brain spotting there, which is similar to EMDR.
Okay.
And I had an hour of brain spotting. And let me tell you what, that helped so much for a month. I felt so good afterwards.
Yes.
I mean, even though I was one of the people that was there called it ugly crying. He goes, I was ugly crying in her office. And I went, so was I. But oh my God, I felt so good afterwards.
Yes.
Pardon me. And I've seen her one other time, but she's not in my HMO
Okay.
So I would have to pay out of pocket for her, which she's $200 an hour.
Yeah.
That's well expensive. Worth it, but she's $200 an hour, which I just can't quite afford right now. Yeah. But I do recommend that people try all sorts of different therapies to see what works for them.
Yes.
EMDR is fabulous. Brain spotting is really good. There's a new one out, ACT, but I can't remember what that stands for. And then there's also the ganglion block, which is out there.
Yes.
CBT. For those that partake that are retired, I am on CBD and CBN. So I cannot work for a department ever again.
You know what? I literally had a Marine reach out to me, and he's someone that I knew from policing as well. And he's no longer a police officer, but he told me of microdosing mushrooms, and it just, what it did for him was remarkable. And when I first heard about this, probably about a year ago, what I heard as people explained it was people sitting around getting high using dope. And I reached out to a friend of mine, Dr. Shauna Springer, and she's an expert on PTSD, done a lot of work at the VA. And she said, Chris, it's not getting high. Microdosing is a totally different game, whether it's with ketamine, mushrooms, marijuana. There's a number of different ways for people to microdose, and it is having some breakthroughs for folks. And so it has really changed my mindset in, I want everything in the toolbox. I want all of this stuff in my toolbox, and I may need to use any of the stuff. I'm not going to use it all at the same time, because that would just, that'd be overwhelming. but I'm going to use, you know, whether it be the modality, like you said, cognitive behavioral therapy. I recently did something called IFS, internal family systems. And at first I was like, okay, this is crazy, you know, witchcraft. And then I leaned into it, and it has been very effective for me. And so there's just a lot of different ways out there, and we're all complex human beings. So let's continue to try stuff until we find that thing that really connects for us.
Exactly. And the marijuana that I've been, well, I guess I take gummies because I can't smoke.
Yeah.
But it's still microdose. I get like 1.25 milligrams of THC and CBN and CBD, but it has taken my dreams from an 11 down to about a 2.
And that right there is darn near a miracle. When you go from an 11 to a 2, that is a huge shift.
It's fabulous. I know I dream at night, but I don't remember them. They're not vivid.
Yeah.
Before, it was just, how did I explain it? Dreams that kept me awake.
Yeah.
I would wake up and go, what the heck was this? And, you know, so it's taken it down. Plus, I was diagnosed with sleep apnea. So I started on a CPAP machine also, and I'm getting sleep again. My dreams aren't disturbing, and I feel great now. And, you know, it's just that slow process of finding what's working for me, and I feel a lot better. And being off the job helps too.
Yeah. Not continuing to take in that trauma.
Exactly.
At the volume that you were taking it in as a dispatcher.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I've only been off not even a month now. Well, really, I've been off for 4 months because I went out the end of June. And it makes a difference. You know, I still have those reactions like you were describing, driving around the city. I've had some really strong reactions, and I don't like it. I don't like the way I feel. I don't like how short I get with my family during those times. Thankfully, I have an amazing wife, like you have an amazing husband, and she sees it in me, and she checks in. What's going on, babe?
Yeah.
And sometimes I know, and sometimes I don't know. Sometimes I have no clue. I just know I am jacked up right now, and I'm trying to figure out why I'm jacked up. And sometimes I can figure it out, and it's like, holy smokes, like that happened in my subconscious mind. I saw something, and I started reacting to it, and now my cognitive brain is trying to catch up, going, where's the fight? What do we need to do here?
Exactly.
And for me, I feel like what's going on in my skin? Like, I don't like this. And I'm being patient with it because I've seen some huge progress already in 4 months with the amazing group therapy and therapists that have been part of my team and helped me.
And just stopping and acknowledging and breathing.
Breathing's probably one. Yeah.
Breathing one, through it.
Number one tool in the toolbox, right?
Yes.
Some kind of controlled breathing.
Yeah. Yep. And I'm slowly getting back. I had to cut out all my favorite shows, all the 911 shows, Chicago shows, Law and Order, cut them all completely out.
Yeah.
And I watch other things now. And that helps also, you know, because when you're first away from that, you're like, okay, I still need that input. And it's like, I was watching one of the shows and I heard a radio transmission in the show that just sent me into a panic attack. And I said, okay, that's it. We're done.
And no,
I can't do this.
Having that self-awareness, we have to have that self-awareness. We have to get curious and figure out what is activating me. And in some cases, we may need to work with a competent therapist to work through those activations. In other cases, we can go, hey, I'm going to set a boundary here. I'm not going to watch that stuff anymore.
Yeah.
I can't watch child abuse stuff. If something is on TV and it has to do with kids, I tell my wife, turn it off or I will leave the room. And she knows. And if she really wants to watch it, I'm cool with that. I'll go find something else to do while she enjoys her show. And I'm going to go enjoy myself doing something totally different. But I get having that awareness first and then making those decisions so that you don't continue to get the exposure is so important. Exactly.
You know, and then add in reasonable stuff down the line that you know, and be aware that, you know, if this something triggers you, then stop. You know, kind of like being on a diet, I guess, finding out what works for you, what doesn't. And, you know, I have, so now instead of Law and Order, I watch, what is that? The Animal Cops. Yellowstone Wardens and Northwest Law or something, you know, and, you know, it's a lot. Toned down. It's like, oh, okay, they're just going after the poachers and stuff. I can do this.
Yeah. Hey, Deborah, I think there are a lot of folks that are struggling out there. I think it's been a rough few years in general for the first responder community, the military community. And then when you add on top of that, the type of stuff that we see, it's been a tough few years. If a fellow dispatcher or police officer, firefighter, military a member is listening, what kind of encouragement do you have for them?
They're not alone, and it's okay to go get help. It's not like it was before. You're not going to lose your job just because you're seeing a therapist. And for those of you getting into the career now that are, you know, less than a year in, get a therapist now. Find that person that clicks with you. And go in and see them every couple months.
Yes.
Because the tools you're going to learn now will help you with those critical incidents down the road. And maybe possibly prevent the extreme PTSD that many of us have gotten. Because we've been discouraged. It was a suck it up buttercup.
Yes.
Life for me. And nobody said that, hey, it's okay, go see a therapist.
Yeah.
It was suck it up, come back tomorrow.
Yeah.
And, you know, abuse yourself some more.
100%.
You know, and people have this fear that they're going to lose their job.
Yes.
And you can go see a therapist and it not be on record, you know, and insurance companies don't tell your employers that you're seeing a therapist.
I think that is a powerful message for people to hear is I love one, get help if you need it right now, raise your hand, reach out to one of us. And if you're brand new and you don't need help right now, establish just like you should have a primary care physician and you should get your blood work done on an annual basis.
Yes.
Find a therapist that you're going to see periodically, whatever that time period is, establish the relationship now, because this is another Doc Springer quote. You don't want to wait until after a bar fight when your teeth are hanging out to find a good dentist. Hopefully you already have a dentist established to where if you get punched in the face, you know where you're going to go to get fixed up. Well, the same goes for a mental health professional. Don't wait until until you are in the dark place. Now, if you are, that's okay. We can help you. Mm-hmm. And let's try to learn how to work with our bodies and our brains for the long haul, from hire to retire and really beyond retire, so that we can be the people we want to be.
Yeah. And it all works together. I have a fabulous psychiatrist. I also have a therapist, but my psychiatrist, she looks at the big picture.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nice that she works for the system that I'm in, so she can pull up my cardiology stuff and my GP stuff and what prescriptions I'm on. And the only thing she doesn't have access to is my dental and my eyes.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're working, you know, because things affect, and people don't realize that. So totally. Your dental health affects your cardiac health, which affects your mental health, which, you know, there's a whole picture there. And I've been screaming at the top of my lungs to my doctors for years about this, but I finally got the one, and you know, it's great with her working with things like that. So
I love it. Hey, Deborah, if someone wants to reach out and ask you a question, what's the best way for them to get in contact with you?
Oh my gosh. I'm on Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Instagram. I am on Twitter, but I don't generally give that one out. And I'm also on TikTok, if anybody's on that too.
I love it. Well, but
yeah. So, you know, just feel free to send me a message, and, you know, I'm always have an ear for anybody that needs help.
I love it. Well, for the listeners, look down in the show notes. You'll find the links for each of those social media platforms down there. Deborah, time is my greatest commodity. I can't make more of this stuff, and you have given me a lot of yours, including your patience and us actually getting together. So thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for allowing me to talk.
Yeah. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Folks, what did you think of Deborah's perspectives? Wow. I was blown away by a couple different things she did there. One, the level of personal responsibility that she took on for her healing process. But then I also heard her talk on the responsibility of our leaders within the criminal justice organizations to help our folks out. Hey folks, Jamie and I want to hear from you. How are we doing here on the podcast? There's a few different ways for you to communicate back to us and to support us. First and foremost, please follow us on whatever podcast platform you're consuming this on. That will cause the next episode to come up. If you're listening on Apple or Spotify, there's a way for you to rate and review us. That will increase the viewership of the podcast. There's 5 stars waiting on our main page. We'd really appreciate a 5-star rating. 5 stars, folks, if we've earned 5 stars. If we haven't earned 5 stars, shoot me an email instead at chris@gravityct.com. Let us know how to make it better. Future Marriage Monday topics or guests for me to interview. Folks, we only get to live this life once. Let's go out and take care of the people in our tribe. Take care of each other. God bless.